Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I am Jim Galante. He is Andy Shea. Andy, Merry Christmas to you.
Merry Christmas. Happy holidays. A fine Boxing Day to everybody out there. There you go. You know what? December 26th is Boxing Day. So I hope everyone has a great holiday season. And we just got a little snow here in the Northeast. So it's a little touch of white Christmas.
Yes, just a tad. Fortunately, not enough to interrupt travel, I don't think. So we'll be okay. We'll survive it. So, Andy, a lot going on for end of the year. We've got Penn State coming up with the Pinstripe Bowl on Saturday against Clemson. It's always great to have football. We're in the middle of the football playoffs. We still got all this coaching talk. We're going to hit portal talk, all of that. Let's start, though, with the playoffs. I haven't spoken to you since the first round of the playoffs went down. I don't think there were a lot of surprises in the first round.
Really?
What did you think is the surprise?
I mean, in the 12-team expanded era last year it was chalk and chalk all over the place, right? It was exactly as expected. And they weren't really great football games. I thought you got some spice to you this year, right? Like, you got some spice to your first round, Oklahoma, Alabama. That was as expected?
Alabama was actually favored in that game, Andy.
It was 17-0 late in the second quarter, Jimmy. Oklahoma was gobsmacking them. It was decent football theater, right? Like, I thought there was a little choking going on by the Oklahoma team, but
I think you're right. I thought the game was very entertaining. And I had picked Oklahoma to win the game. And when they were up 17-0, I was getting ready to text some. Andy's doing a happy dance
there. It's like, I'm going to send out some, hey, Alabama shouldn't have been here.
Oh my God, yes. But in my age, I gained some wisdom, Andy. I stopped myself, okay? I stopped myself from doing it. And then, as you said, Oklahoma, they spit the bit a bit there. So Alabama won. But I don't think anyone was surprised Alabama winning that game. Miami beat Texas A&M. I don't know about you. I was not surprised by that either. I had Miami winning that game.
Yeah, it was the Texas A&M team that kind of had played a little bit of somebody but hadn't really played anybody, right? Like, so they were home. It was a home game for them. I don't know, Jimmy. It was entertaining football theater. Let's put it that way, right? How long was that game 0-0? For a long time, right?
Like, at least through the half, yeah.
Yeah, it's 0-0. It's 3-3 and I don't think it was very good football. I came away like, well, I'm watching and I'm like, yeah, it doesn't matter who wins this game. At the highest levels, you're starting to look at it now, right? That's how you look at the playoffs. You measure against what are the highest. Neither of these teams is going to have a say. If one of them's going to win and neither of these teams is going to have a say. Although, yes, Miami's defense is very good, right? Like, that's the end of their defense is very good. But their offense is just very not good, right? Like, so it was good theater. I don't know if it was good football per se, but it certainly was good theater.
Now, Andy, that's the way to put it. It was not good football, was good theater. And it also, this was something I'd mentioned on earlier shows, Texas A&M, it was it for a Southeast Conference school, it was a pretty empty 11-1.
That's what I mean. Yeah. They played a little bit of somebody, but really didn't play anybody.
Well, here's the I think the real point there is the Southeast Conference got five teams into the playoffs, okay? Five. Obviously, Texas A&M was one of them. They did not play one, not one of the other four playoff teams.
Right.
Correct. So that should tell you when we have conferences that are this large, Andy, and you're barely playing half the teams in the conference, this is going to happen. Just the luck of the draw, somebody is going to come up with a schedule where they're not going to play the best teams.
Penn State, 2026. See you above.
Exactly.
I mean, it's going to be a mess, and we're going to talk about that later. It's going to be, you know, it's a hot mess, Jimmy, but there is opportunity there. So, yeah, it was great theater, but not a good football game. And, okay, so you had the Tulane. Ole Miss played really good football game. That's all I'm going to say. Like, Lane Kiffin was the coach, and they've been through a lot, but they have all their dudes. They showed up. I enjoyed the Oregon-JMU game for many reasons. First of all, Oregon could have named his price offensively. That was just – there was a mismatch there that was clear. But, you know, I like that James Madison's took a swing, right? I don't think Tulane was really capable of taking a good swing at Ole Miss. But I'll tell you what, that JMU offense took a swing at Oregon's defense and exposed them for the football fraud that they are at the next level, which is the college football playoff level. It's been sort of the bane of this football team all year is they're okay defensively, but they're not great. And they're underperforming a little bit at times on that side of the ball. The quarterback has struggled against higher level opponents. I think JMU had its way. Now, I know there was some rotational stuff going on for Oregon, but still, you're at home. You give up. Say you're Penn State, right? You're playing JMU, and you win the game 51-34, and you know your defense is rotating. But at the end of the day, your defense still gave up 34 points. First team, second team, doesn't matter.
Well, the thing is, though, Oregon got out to such a big lead.
I understand that.
But the other part to this conversation, Andy, is we hear a lot of JMU, Tulane did not belong there. Well, and the blowout game is used as justification. I find that a little ironic when, remind me again last year, Andy, Oregon's game when they were ranked number one, their first playoff game against Ohio State. How did that game go, Andy?
Yeah, right. They got monkey stomped, like embarrassed monkey stomped.
Right. So I don't have the same kind of problem so many people do with JMU and Tulane being there. But Andy, let's, you know, shift. Let's look for that next round where the matchups become much more interesting. We got Indiana, Alabama, Ohio State, Miami, Oregon, Texas Tech, Georgia, Ole Miss. What intrigues you?
Oh, Georgia and Ole Miss. Absolutely. The game where I'm like, I don't, is Texas Tech any good? Are they Big 12? Did they belong? Do they belong? Is Oregon the team that could, the Orange Bowl is a game I care the least about and have the least feel for. I think Ohio State, it will be fun to watch Miami's defense be challenged at the next level by Ohio State's offense, right? Can they have some favorable matchups in that game? That will be interesting to me. Ole Miss and Georgia, of course, the SEC delivers again, right? The Sugar Bowl's a hammer, right? It's Ole Miss and Georgia. That's a hammer. It's the SEC champion against, you know, the team that had to endure, you know, their jughead coach running to LSU, and can they hold this together? They looks to me like Ole Miss is pulling on a pretty strong rope, and they're all pulling on it together. It'll be very fast. That's the game to me. Alabama, Indiana is simply a Indiana's pretty darn good. Alabama's the blue blood of the blue bloods, right? Like, they're the blue blood of the blue bloods. Can Indiana on that stage measure up to the blue blood of Alabama, strictly football wise, just for 60 minutes in one football game? That's all you're looking for. You're not talking about historical or program or what this means for Indiana program. 60 minutes. Can they do it? And so in effect, the number one seed, Indiana becomes a little engine that could, in my opinion. Can they do it?
That's the game that fascinates me the most, because it's Big Ten versus Southeast Conference.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that part. Yeah, you look at that. I could care less, but yeah.
Well, the other part to that, Andy, is Indiana truly? Right. You know, they deserve to be ranked number one after beating Ohio State, and I still think Ohio State's probably the best team in the country. But here, this is the game where Indiana proves that they belong. You beat the, as you call, the bluest of blue bloods in right. Alabama, and yeah, they belong. And I'm looking at it like that's the game that really intrigues me, because it changes how I feel about things. But candidly, I love all four. This is why I love the 12-team playoff. I'm intrigued by all four games. I want to know Texas Tech. I think they've looked really, really good. I mean, for a Big 12 team, they play defense, Andy. What's that about?
You drop the heavy in there for a Big 12 team, right? Like, that's your sort of outline. You know, you're sort of into the
outdoors. But are they legit?
Is Oregon the team that gives them legitimacy?
Oregon is maybe not the bluest of blue bloods, but they're a blue blood, Andy. I think it's a chance for Texas Tech to prove that they belong. It doesn't mean they're the best team in the country, but it certainly means they belong if they beat Oregon. So I'm intrigued by all these games. You met Georgia, Ole Miss, you know, Southeast Conference matchup. Love to see what Ole Miss is doing. I'm kind of rooting for Ole Miss to knock Georgia out. All right, Andy, that's it for playoff talk. When we come back, let's talk Pinstripe Bowl.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, our Christmas edition. I'm Jim Galante. He's Andy Shea. It's quarter number two of our show, Andy. And we've got football. We've got Penn State football, Pinstripe Bowl. You know, this is about as bizarre as it gets, Andy. You've got opt-outs. You've got transfer portal guys. You've got an interim head coach. You have the new head coach overlooking everything going on. It's kind of a fascinating formula going on here with Penn State football.
Fascinating is a very interesting choice of adjectives, Jimmy. It is a bit of a mess with a lot of moving parts. That's the way I'll put it. Fascinating is your word. It's messy and it's got a lot of moving parts. But if we're talking about the Pinstripe Bowl, it's sort of in the college football playoff era. This is the 12-team era, at least. This is what you get. But when I look at Penn State and Clemson, I can't help it. I drift back to the, you know, those warm summer days of August when, you know, you were thinking about playing golf or you were thinking about going to the beach and those kind of things. And you were thinking about, you know, Labor Day and what you're going to do on the holiday weekend. And that was when the Nittany Lions and the Tigers were ranked number 2 and number 4, respectively, in the country. And here we are in the dog days of December, you know, bit of frozen tundra going on. And those two teams are in the afterthought stripe bad boy mowers bowl, right? Right. Like whatever. However, you know, both of these teams crumbled, right? Beginning to middle. They were the most embarrassing of the college football playoff teams that you considered potential playoff teams from the beginning of the year. Penn State and Clemson were the embarrassment children. They were the two of the most embarrassing performance programs 6-7 weeks into the year, right? They're not, bar none, the two of them. It's interesting now that they're getting stuck on the same field. However, both of them picked up the pieces, and they come into this game with whatever pieces are left, and there's not many of them, it seems, for both teams, kind of. They've won 7 games in a row combined. Penn State's won 3. Clemson won its last 4 games. So there's still going to be shells of who they were to win those 7 games. But, you know, there is a little intrigue for the two most disappointing potential college football playoff teams entering this season. That's the way I look at this game. You know, just at the beginning, as you enter, say, what do you think about this game? That's it.
Well, Andy, I'm looking at this game kind of the same way that I looked at Penn State games through at least the second half of the season when they eliminated themselves from the conference, from the playoffs, from everything else, fired James Franklin. I stopped looking at individual games in the context of the season and started to look at them for strictly entertainment value for that single day, because after the game, victory or defeat changes nothing in the big picture, okay? And that's what the case is for this bowl game. There's nothing at stake. Right. There's also, Andy, not the traditional bowl game of this is the first game of next year, no. You know? No. It's not, because you have not only a head coaching change, entire staff changeover, those young players who you want to see and hope they perform well, which is setting the stage for next season. We don't even know if those young players who excel in this game are going to be around next year.
Correct. Clemson's going to be without about 25 players, per se, right? Like, they're going to be without more bodies, it seems. At least initially, that's what it looks like right now heading into the game. They're going to be missing more, but that's just a steady ship that you can expect in this era. Penn State's got all the, you know, sort of the fire and brimstone around it. There's a lot of moving parts, and like I said, Who's going to call plays? What are they going to do in this game offensively, right? Like, you don't expect either of those running backs to play, which down the stretch they put the offense on those two guys' shoulders.
Let me stop you there, Andy. Let me stop you for just 1 second. When just full disclosure, we're recording the show ahead of time.
Right, right.
Officially, Nick Singleton is out. We haven't gotten any word yet on Catron Allen as we record this. Would either of us be surprised if he didn't play? No. But I just wanted to clarify point, Andy. I didn't mean to interrupt, but wanted to clarify that.
Yeah, if he's playing, that's stupid, right? Like, after the year he had this year and where he's put himself, there's no tangible reason for him to play. He might, but, you know, which offensive line? There's just – where's Matt Campbell going to stay in all this? And it's still Terry's team. So it's just the way I've been telling my Penn State friend, it's sort of kind of dirty and gritty as this transition, as this is the dirty gritty part, because there's a football game in the middle of it, right? Like, you gotta, if they weren't bowl eligible, didn't have a bowl game, and I'm glad they are bowl eligible, that speaks volumes for the a little bit of the character of these kids. If you didn't have the football part of it, the lines and everything would be a much cleaner, it would be a much cleaner transition phase right now, right, Jimmy? But this football game kind of makes it all kind of gritty and dirty and a little bit confusing, and like, hold this, go with that, stop here, go there, go left, go right. You know, it's very navigate, walk the fine line. It's a very tricky, you know, prospect time right now. And, you know, they're going to go out there in the field and they're going to play. I don't know how many offensive linemen are going to play. We know what's missing on the defense. I think Penn State has a matchup advantage that I really like, which to me is, look, all indicators are Cade Klubnik's going to play quarterback for Clemson. He's going to play the whole game. He's the best player on the field, bar none. That's it. End of story. He's the best player on the field. However, what Clemson really did well, he was better down the stretch when they won those four games, Cade was for the Tigers. However, Clemson buttered its bread on defense. That defense took over and ran football games. And 75% of that defense, the individuals responsible for that, are not playing in this bowl game. So I believe no matter whether it's the young running backs, we know who Penn State's quarterback's going to be. I think Penn State has a little bit of a matchup advantage. It's kind of weird to say that with all these players not playing, when they have the ball against what will be a true second team, mostly defense for the Clemson Tigers. That is the matchup advantage. I think that's going to be the intriguing part of the football game to watch for me.
Agreed. And the biggest variable, Andy, is that we already know how many players from Clemson aren't going to play.
Correct.
We really don't know on the Penn State side. In the positive spin, I want to say, gee, I'm surprised at how few opt-outs there are.
No opt-outs right now, correct.
But, yeah. But
more come.
That's what I'm concerned about. Are we all of a sudden going – there were some players, you know, the Drew Shetlands, Deni Dennis Suttons, Katron Allens. There's a lot of players that I expected to opt out and didn't. So are we still just waiting for that other shoe to drop? But as I say that, Andy, you can't go into this game feeling the tension of victory versus defeat. You got to just accept this game for what it is. It's almost as if this is a glorified spring game, and it's not even that, because you're not even looking to see some hints on how this team's offense is going to be designed. There's no guarantee that anyone who plays well in this game, that's an indicator for next year. My goodness, the young quarterback who you would typically look at as, gee, let's see how he performs in this bowl game as a precursor to next year.
Yep,
Andy, if I asked you to lay odds on Ethan Grunkmeyer being back for next season, what would you put it at?
1-5?
Maybe.
I mean, it's
I want you to be wrong, clear. But I can't disagree with you.
Yeah, no. So it is literally I feel that, you know, Terry and what's left of the guys coaching, you know, this team right now, it's literally individual position by individual position. Who do we think can play there for the game? Not we need to look at him for the future, or we need to evaluate him, or he needs to lay film down. What actual dude is available and willing to play 60 minutes at left guard, right? Who should we play at left? Who is available to play at left guard? And who's behind him? Okay, next position. Who's left tackle? Who can we play at left tackle? Who's willing to play? And who do we play behind him? Like, individual position by individual position, that's what they've had to put together. And then you go, okay, this is our dudes. what are we going to do? Right. Like, what are we going to do? What can we do? And what are we going to do? So it's a very weird dynamic, and it's a weird dynamic for both teams. It's a little more weird for Penn State with the coaching transition, but it's just a weird dynamic all around this football game.
Hey, Andy, I'm giving you a minute. You know what time it is. Prediction and bold prediction time.
I'm going to pick Clemson to win the game. I think they have, you know, they have the best player in the field. I know he doesn't have his wide receivers. I'm going to go Clemson 24, Penn State 17.
And bold?
I didn't really think of a bold prediction.
Well, let me give you mine, and I'll give you a quick second to think about it. I have Penn State winning 30-20 because of Clemson missing half their team. My bold prediction is one of those young running backs is going to impress us, and we're going to say, oh, look at that. We could build around that next season, and then we wonder if he's going to return. Go ahead.
I will say that Penn State scores all his points in the first half.
That is bold. That is very bold.
And leads the game at halftime and loses the game in the fourth quarter.
All right, Andy, that's it for quarter two. Stick around. We got your questions, and we're going to ask Andy.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim, he's Andy. It's quarter number three, which means it's the segment you take over the show. You send us our questions for Andy, and Andy delivers top of the line answers. Let's start with Dave in King of Prussia. Dave says, what is the point of even playing this ball game? The coaching staff will be gone. Many of the young players will be leaving. I don't understand the point.
Football's fun, Dave. Right? Kids like to play the game. I think, there's some top-end questions. There's a coaching turnover, but there's still probably 70 kids on this roster who enjoy and love to play football. And so I just think I think you nailed it in the last quarter, Jimmy, when you're like, you don't care about, you're going to root for your team, but whether or not they win or lose has no impact on you. It doesn't matter for the program. It doesn't matter anything going forward. The absolute takeaways from this game is a zero-sum game for Penn State. There isn't a single takeaway to take away from this game. I don't care what the result looks like, how it comes about, who does well or does something if they win the game and how it happened. It's a zero-sum game. None of that matters going forward because literally you're about to go back to ground zero on almost every single front with a new coaching staff.
I agree 100%, Andy. Enjoy the game for what it is. It's a football game. It's an additional Penn State football game. It reminds me of something. Last home game at Penn State this year when we weren't sure how much attendance there'll be, who would be showing up, who wouldn't. And our good friend of the show, Chris Buchanan, I was tailgating with him, and he made the comment. He said, we get 7 of these games a year. Seven home games.
That's it. 7.
That's it. Why would you voluntarily give up one of those events? Getting together with friends and family, tailgating, watching a game. Now, I'm going to be on Saturday, a post-Christmas, my family will celebrate after Christmas. So we're celebrating Christmas on Saturday. We are, many of us are going to be together watching the game. We're a Penn State family, a lot of Penn State grads throughout the family, multiple generations, Andy. Fun. We're going to be in front of the TV. We're going to enjoy the game, win, lose, or draw. We'll have more fun if they win. But as soon as the game ends, guess what? It's still the holiday celebration. That will not be affected by a loss. So just enjoy it for what it is.
The stakes are low. That's what I'm going to say. Yeah. It's a low stakes game. Enjoy it.
Just have fun with it. All right, let's move on. Let's go to Barry in Mechanicsburg, shifting gears a bit. Barry says, who will be the quarterback next year? Ethan Gronkmeyer, Rocco Beck, or the field? What do you got your money on, Andy?
That's a good one, Barry. It's going to be, you know, Matt Campbell as the Penn State head coach. It's going to be his first field. Give me field.
Wow. Interesting.
Give me field. I say that for a couple of reasons. I'm not going to review. I just think that I would, here's the order I would put it. Field, Ethan, Iowa State quarterback, transfer.
I'm going the opposite way, Andy. Now, I don't think Rocco Beck is the non-brainer.
It's not a sure thing. Not at all.
And part of the reason for that, Andy, and maybe this is your trepidation with it too, is 5 years ago, maybe 3 years ago, new coach, he would bring along his quarterback if he could, if he's in the portal. But the biggest variable we know with these portal players, and especially the quarterbacks, it's money.
Money.
You know, if Penn State's offering the kid $1 million and somebody else is offering him $2 million, and you know what, for Rocco Beck, I'm not sure he's an NFL quarterback, Andy.
I agree.
So make your payday now. It's not like, hey, $1 million or so doesn't matter to me today because come NFL, I'm going to make much more money. No, he's got to make it now while he can. So if someone, a Southeast Conference school is offering him twice as much money, if he's smart, he'll go there. He may want to follow Matt Campbell, but he's got to follow the money.
Is he that much better than Ethan, that it's a no-brainer? It's not in my book. That's the way I put it third. I'm like, I'm not saying that he's worse than Gronkmeyer. I'm not saying he's necessarily quote-unquote better, but I know he's not a no-brainer better. That I'm convicted of. And I'm like, you know, maybe it's a 55-45. Swing it either way you like. Is that what your answer is?
Well, here, I understand what you're saying, and I think of it that way also. I was impressed with Ethan Gronkmeyer down the stretch, and he's still young. He's a redshirt freshman, but the difference is this is Matt Campbell's guy, and coaches look at things like he knows the offense. We know what we have there, you know, that familiarity. So I don't want to say I fear that will rule the day, but I think it could. I will look at it much differently than Matt Campbell will.
Right. You're the Penn State coach now, Matt. Remember that.
But, you know, the guy that you've had before.
Is he a no-brainer better than what you have sitting here waiting for you? That is your guy for the new team that you took over. That's my question. It's the same. It's tomato, tomato. We're talking about the same thing. I don't know that he's markedly better. And he's a one-year fix. He's going to be a one-year wonder. And that's why I took the field, because is Matt capable and do they have the resources? Yes, they do, to get something higher and better for a one-year fix, if that's where they're going.
I just feel like if you don't get Rocco Beck, I think Grunkmeyer would be the first option. All right, let's move on. Let's go to Charlie in Binghamton, who says, what is the difference in coaching in the Big 12 versus the Big 10? Is there a difference?
So, yes, the difference is, to me, is you have to swim in the deep end of the pool more often in the Big 10. That's it. You've got more high-end depth. Let's just put it that way. You have the potential to have two or three, you know, for example, based on how the schedule plays out, you could have two or three deep end water games. You're going to get maybe two in the Big 12, but you could get three or four in the Big 10. The high end depth, it could undo you quickly in the Big 10. So, that's where I feel the biggest difference is. They're bigger, better, and stronger. They're deeper. And that's what the difference in coaching is. You know, you might have two games in 3 weeks where you play, you know, Ohio State, Oregon, and then you have a bye week, then you play Penn State, right? Like, you're just going to have that possibility, or, you know, play two of those four in a month, for example. It's just the high end depth. If you're sort of a middle of the pack, it can slay you. And I don't think you have that in the Big 12.
Andy, I think there's the difference. I'm going to use a baseball analogy here as a baseball fan. Everybody knows I'm a Mets guy.
Absolutely. Yeah.
The general manager, current general manager for the Mets, used to be the GM of the Milwaukee Brewers, a small market team. He is very successful on a curve. Now, the Mets during this offseason, they've lost their star closer, Edwin Diaz. They've lost Pete Alonso, the star first baseman. And they were, quote unquote, outbid for these players. You're a New York team. You're not supposed to be outbid. It's the same way with Penn State. Now you're supposed to swing for the fences, get the five-star guys. We were talking about Rocco Beck, and you know, Rocco Beck is probably a pretty good player for the Milwaukee Brewers, but is he the star free agent in New York? Okay. Well, you're now playing in New York. Penn State's a blue blood and is supposed to be, Andy, getting the stars, the five stars, the four stars, not the two and three stars, and you coach them up to be a good team. You got to swing for the big, you know, the big hits, the big guys. And that to me is the difference. Can Matt Campbell do that? Could he recruit that type? And can he be comfortable saying, you know what, this guy's a bit of a prima donna, but you know what, I got to take that swing anyway, because the high side is too high that to give up on. All right, Andy, you know what? We got just a little over a minute left. I'm going to go with this one. And this is Rob from Florida, who says, no question, guys. Just wanted to wish you happy holidays and thank you for keeping me entertained with Nittany Lion talk throughout the year. Thank you, Rob.
There you go. And your question is, Penn State's football team gave you a different level of entertainment this year. I mean, it's the least football we've talked about in the football season ever of us doing this show together, Jimmy, being of KSN ever. During that 16-week window of football, we talked about football by far the least on many fronts. It wasn't even close. You can't even see second place. It was a very, it's been a very, very, very difficult time. And it hasn't kind of, in many ways, Jimmy, there's still a few bottom outs coming. There's still a little bit of down to go.
Next week is going to be a rough week when we start hearing about those portal exits, Andy. But with that said, thank you, Rob, and happy holidays to you also. We are glad we have so many loyal listeners from throughout the country. Rob's from Florida. Rob, have a great holiday and a happy new year. Andy, let's talk a bit about that Penn State future when we come back.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. Merry Christmas to everyone out there. Happy New Year. That's coming up also. I'm Jim Galante. He's Andy Shea, quarter number four of our show. And Andy, you know, you mentioned at the end of quarter three how little we talk actual football during the season.
Yeah, it's been an interesting year.
Yeah, it's not been the big story. It's what's going on off the field. You know, James Franklin being let go, then the coaching search. All of those are huge stories. And Andy, what's coming up is the huge story of where is this team going to go now? So much going on for Matt Campbell. By all reports, he's made an awesome impression on everybody in the football building. Staff, old staff who's moving on, current staff who may or may not be sticking around, players, administrative people, even the Penn State players who are graduating, moving on, who will never play under Matt Campbell, have had really good things to say about him. But Andy, his work has just begun, and it's going to hit the fan next week when the transfer portal opens. What do you see happening with this Penn State team? We've already seen, as far as portal goes, Elliot Washington, recently A.J. Harris, Joey Schlaffer very early on, Alex Birchmeyer, and I guess the big one in Chaz Coleman have all declared for the portal. How many more players do you think are going to hit the portal? Where are you setting the over-under?
A dozen more beyond them? I think it's 10 to 12, to be honest with you. I think I'm pretty comfortable in that second-tier number that you'd lose a quarter, at least a quarter of that roster of what you would have identified as next level, up and coming, whatever term you want to use for it. They were the next, you know, they were the next possibilities of being highlight players at Penn State. I think some of these will be highlight players, some of them weren't, but I think you're going to lose 25 to a third of this, of that level of the roster. I think that's where it's going to end up. And Matt Campbell hasn't even gotten started per se. In a way, it's got to get past the new year and to find out, you know, what are the pieces he has left to pick up that have been scattered and shattered? How's that for a term? A little, you know, for lack of a better, it's by the pieces that are scattered and shattered by Pat Kraft and his bumbling of the hiring of the football coach process. How much, where does that bottom out? And what are the pieces left that Matt is going to grab onto and start to put his building blocks in place to try and put it back together? It's Humpty Dumpty. The pieces are going to be scattered and shattered on many reasons. There's an NFL element to it. There's a lot of players on this football team that are going to be our NFL eligible and our NFL caliber players. That's one element to it. Transfer portal. No recruiting class, yada, 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 go on and on. All of it's shaped by the change in coaching staff. And so he hasn't even begun to pick up the pieces because he doesn't know what all the pieces are left, what they're going to look like at the end of the day. And then he's got to go from there. So to me, in my mind, his job sort of starts, you know, January 4th, January 5th. That's when he, you know, he's still doing, and there's still things he's putting in place right now, but the real tangible work that he knows he's got to do starts when he has to, when he's able to start putting Humpty Dumpty back together again.
No doubt, Andy, there's going to be more bad news before good news starts.
Exactly.
What's surprising to me, Andy, and again, we might be shocked, you know, before the Pinstripe Bowl, but in looking at the players, and I mentioned them, the five that hit the portal, I think Chaz Coleman's the only one I look at and say, oh, geez, really wish he didn't hit the portal.
AJ Harris, I like AJ Harris.
Going into this season, I think we all thought very highly of him. But what did you see from him this season, Andy? Did you see a guy that you were still that crazy about?
So I saw a guy that was not put in a position to be successful in what he does well. And he was struggling to find his game, right? I don't think in the scheme of the defense, I don't think he is a stand in your face sort of Ohio State lockdown corner, right? Like that kind of corner. He's a better reactive corner. He's a good cover corner. He's a good, use him as a weapon corner. You know, he's aggressive. He's willing tackler. He's a good run supporter. I don't think he was put in a great position this year. I'm still bullish on him, Jimmy. I think he's a really good football player, and I think he could help this team if he stayed around.
He could end up somewhere and still have a good career, a good finish to his career. But I also wonder when I start to see these transfers. Now, I think Chaz Coleman, very different. I think they really wanted him back. But some of these other players, I also want – remember, this is a bit of a two-way street.
It is a two-way
street. You don't drop players, but I think there's players you show a little more love to than others.
There's addition by subtraction.
The other part to this that surprises me a bit is I've always been with you. I think there's still going to be a pretty decent number of players who are going to hit the portal. But I'm kind of curious why – they haven't opted out already. If you know you're going to hit the portal, why are you sticking around for the bowl game?
Football's fun. I want to play football.
You do, but remember, it's a business.
It is a business.
I don't want to get hurt. We know you're not supposed to talk to other schools yet, but we know that's going on. It's why a year ago, Bo Prabula, hit the portal, and the next day he's at Missouri. Those kind of things, we know that's going on, Andy. So that it surprises me a bit. I don't know if that's an indicator of anything. We shall see. But there's still no doubt we're going to see, those players leaving. But I think some of it is, and again, quarterback position is kind of a microcosm for everything else. We know Matt Campbell's going to bring in several Iowa State players. We know that's going to happen. Sure. But is it Rocco Beck? Is his connection to him so great that's going to happen, which pretty much means Ethan Grunkmeyer will be on his way? Or, is this – hey, you look like you and I talked about. Ethan Grunkmeyer could be the future with several years of eligibility. But there's still going to be those guys heading out, Andy. And it's not going to be till we start to see the incoming players that we're going to start to hear good news for Penn Staters.
Yeah, it's gonna take a while. Here's the interesting thing about this offseason. Fortunately, it's like Penn State was in the spotlight for the longest time as the sort of the Big Ten blue blood that's, sort of bottoming out or, has. And then Michigan came along and said, hold my beer. Right. So Michigan and Penn State, for different reasons, but there's transition at the top. There's upheaval, turnover. you know, Michigan doesn't have a coach yet. They're still waiting. Their roster is open season, right? Like, you're not allowed to negotiate with them. Michigan, the day after that Sherrone nightmare was announced for him and his family, it was open season on Michigan's roster, yes. Right? Like, you know, of course everyone's talking to Michigan players. How far does that fall? So I think it's the fascinating thing will be as you watch what, and it doesn't matter. It matters who Michigan hires a coach, but it really doesn't matter. Whoever that coach is, him and Penn State, Matt Campbell, and whoever the Michigan coach is for these two football programs are in the same spot. What, which one, how do they do it? What does it look like? You have a direct comparison right in your conference that is, you know, a carbon copy blue blood of the other. So that's the fascinating part. They don't have to do this on an island under a single microscope. Michigan gets to help them along the way and be the sort of the lead dog in this.
It's a good point to bring up what Michigan's going through. And I think just by timing, Penn State has the head start by having Matt Campbell in place, putting a staff in place.
Yeah.
Getting the opportunity to talk to the current players. Now, you know, Iowa State may not be this team that's just loaded with talent that you want to cherry pick, but might I remind you, you know, 2 years ago, Kurt Cignetti, he brought his James Madison team with him.
Football players are football players.
Right. And you could see Matt Campbell is going to be able to cherry pick from his Iowa State roster. That's helpful in just stabilizing things. If he can bring in, you know, 8 to 10, you know, current Iowa State players.
A little bit.
Position by position, you know, like this is how we do it here at, you know, on the offensive line. Here is how we play this defense, this scheme. That's going to be very helpful in that transition period. Then it becomes also the other part to this is, again, I'll use the baseball analogy. Penn State just freed up a lot of money, okay, with all those players going out the door. Whatever they were paying Drew Aller and Nick Singleton and Catron Allen and Deni Dennis Sutton, besides however many are transferring, that's freed up money, Andy, that you could invest in new players.
Yeah, there's a different, it's the same principle, but it'll be done differently. There is how much money, how much resource can they put into roster retention? In other words, how much money can they spend to keep some of these guys around? And they're going to need that. That's my starting point for me is maybe they have to overpay a little bit, but that's where they're at right now. How much of this can they hold together to start with?
But they will have the resources to do that.
Yeah, oh,
Chaz Coleman, I believe they really wanted to retain, but it seemed he had a foot out the door when he had a conversation with folks after the Ohio State Penn State game. All right, Andy, that's going to be the final word. Merry Christmas. Thank you, Andy. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.